Country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. That's the end of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I have a thing about Greta Thunberg. I have a thing about her. She's a particularly annoying, nasty, preachy little social justice warrior. She's the Miss Climate Change. And has a habit of whining and blaming her elders. And she was recently at a big climate confab in Madrid, and she was on her way back to Sweden. Anyway, she put out a message that she had trouble on the train, and here's a commentary sent to me. Little Miss, how dare you? Is being caught telling lies. She sent out a complaint on Twitter. She's traveling on overcrowded trains through Germany, and I'm finally on my way home. Our train from Basel was taken out of traffic, so we sat on the floor on two different trains. After Göttingen, I got a seat. That would be when the train crossed into Sweden. There's no problem, of course, and I never said there was. Overcrowded trains are a great sign because it means the demand for train travel is high. And she had a picture of herself with her suitcases. She seemed to have quite a lot. Sitting there on the floor, looking rather distraught. Or rather tired. Anyway, you're inclined to say, oh, poor dear. Well, because she has quite undeservedly quite a following, German train company, Deutsche Bahn, saw her tweet and felt insulted by the photograph of her sitting on the floor looking as though she'd been somehow in fourth class, and that she had to sit on the floor twice because of overcrowding. Anyway, it responded, reminding her that she'd booked first class seats on both trains and only emerged from them briefly so her PR propaganda folks could snap the heartrending picture of poor little Greta reduced to sitting on the floor and no doubt being forced to inhale oodles of the nasty carbon dioxide while staring wistfully out the window. In other words, she traveled first class. This was just a canned photo of her sitting on the floor beside her suitcases as if she'd been, just sort of relegated to the to the outside. The whole Greta Thunberg thing is a carefully managed media, carefully managed propaganda thing aimed at creating a sort of a warrior princess of her who sacrifices and so on. She is extremely well paid, and her travels are well organized for her. Anyway, more along the lines of you just can't trust these people. I've got this item here. The Danish immigration minister says the following: tell Somali Muslims, return home and rebuild the country you came from. Now, that's very good advice. You know, all these people who are refugees, well, whatever is happening there does not go on and on and on and on forever. At some point, you draw the line and say, okay, well, the Civil War seems to have worn down. Why don't you go back to the land that you say you're a refugee from and make a contribution? Do something for it. Like, help rebuild it. What about something like that? Anyway, this is the report from her, and her name is Støjberg. She's the Danish minister of migration. I guess that's immigration, too. Denmark has admitted many Muslim migrants, but is also trying to preserve its culture. That's what Denmark is. It has introduced a series of integration programs to stop non-Western migrants ghettoizing in the Scandinavian peninsula, including telling migrants in high ethnic neighborhoods that their children must attend daycare from the age of one to learn Danish values, or the parents face losing social security benefits. Social security benefits, in other words, they're parasiting. Yeah, you know, poor old Western countries, you know, we are just endlessly put upon. And it's also sending migrants back home. Since early 2017, the Immigration Service began its review of refugee residency permits, and nearly 1,000 Somalis have had their Danish residency permit revoked. See, we don't do it that way in Canada. We grant them refugee status, and they're then on the way to landed immigrant status. Yeah, that's right. The sky's the limit. What they're doing in Denmark tends to be to let them give them protection, but it can be reviewed. That's a good thing. Danish Migration Minister Inger Støjberg has stated, if you no longer need our protection and your life and health are no longer at risk in your home country, and specifically in Somalia, you must, of course, return home and rebuild the country from which you came. Now, that's a very, very sensible, solid approach. Listen to it one more time. If you no longer need our protection and your life and health are no longer at risk in your home country. In other words, if it's safe for you to return, then go. Go back and rebuild your country. Stop parasiting here off us. The Danish Parliament has also given the go-ahead to a new policy that will see criminal migrants placed in an uninhabited island before their deportation, which is a good idea given the speed of jihadi radicalization in Western jails. Preserving democracy and the rule of law and the stability of society should be the first priority of every European leader. In October, Ms. Støjberg rejected European Union efforts to impose migrant quotas, saying too few contribute to the workforce. In other words, many of these people are are permanently unemployed or probably even unemployable. Denmark being known as a country with a high cultural value work ethic. The failure of numerous Muslim migrants to assimilate and integrate into European culture has been proven to be a massive problem. The migrant crisis in Europe, mass rapes, jihadi attacks, no-go zones, Sharia patrols, Sharia courts, a rise in child marriage, an increase in female genital mutilation, and the like continues. Under no circumstances should any aspect of Western principles or laws be sacrificed to suit foreign interests. Yet this is happening and increasing since the so-called migrant crisis began. The ongoing assault against the cornerstones of free society, free expression, is also increasing. Very, very solid common sense from the Danes. And once again, you see the where the pressure is coming from. The rascally European Union pressuring the European Union countries to accept even more so-called migrants. Well, here's the latest on Greta. I hate to excuse me. Focus on her, but as she's in the news, now she's threatening a hunger strike. This is Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old. At 16, she travels the world speaking out personally against inaction to global climate change. She famously gave an earful to those gathered at the United Nations, accusing them of uncaringly poisoning her generation. She's just been named the Time Magazine Person of the Year, and now in a show of defiance to fight against those she refers to as the American face of ignorance and irrationality, Greta Thunberg is going on a hunger strike until it is confirmed that Donald Trump is removed from the position of President of the United States. So Greta's going on a hunger strike until Trump is out. Well, first of all, I don't think Trump is going to be found guilty by the Republican-controlled Senate impeachable offenses. Apparently, although this is not certain either, the Senate will be might consider the articles of impeachment passed by the House in January. And we are sitting at December 20th today. Little Greta could reach at least wait at least a month for a decision, by which time she may have succeeded in starving herself to death. I suspect this is all a lot of hooey and will come to nothing, but okay. Although the Democrat Congress has set the beleaguered president's impeachment trial for early January, Thunberg insists that she's ready to begin her protest now. Weighing in at just nearly 130 pounds, the diminutive teenager, she's very small, how can she be 130 pounds, has been warned against such an undertaking by doctors and relatives alike, but is assured and unmoved. She's not doing anything. This is what Gandhi did. I saw the movie, she says. The balance of a human life will outweigh the ignorance and douchebaggery of Trump. That's what she says. I will subsist for as long as I need on the elements in the air and the nutrients of the spirit that flow from Mother Nature through the wind. She's going to get by on air. I certainly hope Donald Trump doesn't decide, oh gee, I think Greta's going to starve herself to death. I'll resign. This should be another drama that we'll have to watch. My will to heal this world is strong. stronger even than the antibiotics that Mrs. Trump ingests in order to sleep next to her husband without contracting any array of herpes simplexes. I will prevail. Now, how she knows that, or how, I mean, and that is just plain disgusting for us, rather to say that. The Thunberg's protest will begin this weekend after a gala ceremony thrown by Time magazine to celebrate her honor. Her pre-fast menu will include tofu steaks grilled on sun mirrors, broccoli nuggets fried in coconut oil heated by cacao farts. And Joe, and in attendance will be the two runners-up for the award, Keanu Reeves, who wowed audiences by being John Wick a third time by acting under the influence of Quaaludes, and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones for surviving his 200th drug-induced heart attack. I hope it doesn't sound as long as kind of reflecting old age, but I mean, honestly, the things like this make you think the world has gone absolutely flipping mad. Well, no rights if you're white. Here's a story about a man who was disciplined by his bus company for wearing a kilt. This was it was on a dress down Friday, and so he decided, as he's of Scottish origin, then he would wear a kilt. Well, the company didn't like that and sent him home and said he couldn't wear a kilt. So he took them to the Ontario Human Rights Commission. Now, you know, normally, any cry of discrimination immediately has the Human Rights Commission all in a knock, ready to weigh in on behalf of the poor discriminated against person. But no rights if you're white. A bus driver sent home to change out of the kilt he wore to work on a casual Friday was not a victim of anti-Scottish discrimination, Ontario Human Rights Tribunal has ruled. In its decision, the tribunal decided that Tracy, and he's a male, MacDonald, had provided no evidence. The director from the Grand River Transit in Waterloo region was improper. The applicant is proud of his ancestry and wears a kilt on special occasions. I find that he is not pointed to any evidence in his testimony to establish that he had the right, protected under the code, to wear a kilt at work or while on duty, adjudicator José Bouchard wrote in a decision. MacDonald has pointed to no evidence, she said, in his testimony to establish that he was harassed. The incident arose on a charity fundraising Friday in October 2017, when a supervisor told the 14-year driver to change out of his rented kilt into proper. Into a proper uniform. Well, this was supposed to be a dress down Friday. This would seem to be discriminatory treatment. MacDonald alleged discrimination because of his Scottish ancestry. Evidence at a hearing last month showed that the bus line had previously made it clear to employees that kilts were off limits on casual Fridays, despite the relaxed dress code in which the drivers wore jeans or different colored shirts. MacDonald testified the ban in response to another driver who had previously worn a kilt upset him, and he wanted to make a point. He said he was proud of his Scottish ancestry, listened to Scottish music, and ate haggis. He also said he was married, wearing a kilt. MacDonald argued that what he wore was akin to wearing a turban for religious reasons or something from other countries. He explained that on casual Fridays, employees wear all sorts of attire, such as shorts, baseball caps, and he did not see what was wrong with wearing a kilt. Bouchard said, in his view, forbidding employees to wear a kilt while on duty on casual Fridays is clearly discriminatory. Well, that's what he believed, but the tribunal did not. he makes a good point. There's special privileges for various minority groups. If he'd been a Sikh, despite the fact that the company probably has a uniform hat, the Sikh would be exempt. He could wear a turban. If they hired a female driver and she was a Muslim of some sort, she could wear a hijab, even though other employees would not be allowed to. See, there's non-stop discrimination against white people. Rights. Yeah, rights. But not for whites. And this is something that, you know, I think we've got to push back relentlessly against. We've got to be relentless in pointing this out, that we are victims, but because of our own rascally class, our own rascally ruling class. Here's a letter from the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier, to supporters, and I think it's very short, and makes a very good point. Just about to get it for you here. And the letter is headlined, The Red Tories Are Back. Now, in England, in Canada, the Red Tories could be the equivalent of probably what you'd call the country club Republicans, in that but they like to say they're conservative in economics and liberal in social values. So, in other words, they're pro-abortion, pro-mass immigration, and so on, but they want a balanced budget or something like that. In Canada, we call them the Red Tories. In England, they're called the Wets. In fact, one of the actions of Boris Johnson has been to purge most of the Wets from the Conservative Party, because most of them were bucking him against the Brexit, or the leaving of the European Union. This is the statement from Maxime Bernier. You know why I left the Conservative Party last year? It's because it had become a corrupt centrist party headed by a leader with no clear convictions. Now that Andrew Scheer is gone, he resigned a week ago, who are the big names that are being talked about to replace him? Former Progressive Conservative, that was the name of the party an iteration ago. The former Progressive Conservative leaders, Peter MacKay, who's a kind of a lefty from Nova Scotia, and former, he was a former Progressive Conservative Party leader for a while, Jean Charest, who went on to become the Liberal Premier of Quebec, and now that he's being talked about as a possible candidate for the leadership of the Conservative Party. Charest was the man who promised to make the provincial government leaner as Quebec Premier, but ended up increasing its size during his two mandates. And of course, he loved to distribute billions in subsidies to his corporate friends. The man who, as Mulroney's environment minister, headed Canada's delegation to the 1992 Rio Summit and gave impetus to the climate alarmist nonsense. Yeah, I mean, the difference between Jean Charest and Justin Trudeau is exceedingly slight. Maybe Justin Trudeau has a slightly more attractive head of hair, but, you know, on what matters, nothing. And Charest was also the man Trudeau named recently as a special envoy to help Canada get a seat on the United Nations Security Council. In short, the very embodiment of a globalist, centrist, red Tory who loves big government. The red Tory establishment is back, and more than ever, Canada needs a principled conservative alternative. And the letter goes on to make a pitch to send some funds to the People's Party of Canada. Here is a very typical of the sort of reporting in the lamestream media about anything that involves black crime. And this is actually from the right wing, yeah, that's right, right wing, right wingers, Toronto Sun. And it's a story about a killing. And one a cop called it the most callous killing I've ever seen. The shooter in Toronto's 67th homicide was an opportunistic murderer out hunting for a kill. Quote, this is one of the most callous killings that I've ever seen, said Detective Sergeant Terry Brown, who has been with the homicide division for 16 years. I've probably seen everything people can do to each other, but I've never seen a human being look to hunt another. I don't know if the, I mean, what's so horrific about that. I mean, how unusual. I mean, the bad, yeah, but anyway. On December 11th, at about 8 p.m., 22-year-old Ontario College of Art and Design University student Jeremy Vincent Urbina was taking out the garbage at his family's housing complex in the Finch-Leslie Street area of North Toronto. Urbina, who had no prior history with police, was shot in the double digits and died at the scene. I guess shot in the double digits would mean he was shot more than 10 times. Two suspects captured on video surveillance had been prowling the area for some time, Detective Sergeant Terry Brown said. He said there was a lack of interaction between Urbina and the shooter, who could have been looking for anyone. Quote, to have someone walk around for that length of time isn't something that we see happen. This wasn't a quick drive-by, the detective said. It's my belief that the shooter did not know Mr. Urbina, and the victim would have seen these masked people coming from would not have seen these masked people coming from behind. He didn't see it coming. 2 minutes earlier or 2 minutes later, he might not have been a victim. The reason why he, the killer, did this does not matter, the detective said. The fact that he did this is the most alarming. It's the most callous killing I've seen, and the fact that he's still out there is very concerning. The suspects, one wearing a pink mask, were seen fleeing the scene. Surveillance shows a partial of one of their faces. Detective Brown says that even though the pair went to great lengths to hide their identity, he would be shocked and surprised if someone doesn't know them. As for the second attacker who didn't pull the trigger, the detective says he considers him to be a party of to the shooting. The non-shooter had an opportunity to contact us and say he didn't know what was happening and get a lawyer. Okay. There are two pictures of the taken from the video surveillance of the shooters. There you see a part of the face of one of them from the nose up. That's quite clearly a black. And similarly, although the picture is even more obscure, the second. So, in other words, both of these suspects are black. Nowhere in the text does it say that. Nowhere does it give the best summary that they can of who it is the police are looking for. Two, obviously, they're males. Two males, black. There might maybe some indication, some estimate of their age, and so on. What goes on here? Well, as usual, the fudging of the fact that these killers are black. The color of violent crime in the city of Toronto is black, as it is in so much of the United States. I'm not saying every violent crime is committed by a black, but over 75% of violent crime, which is defined as armed robbery, rape, and murder, is done by blacks, who constitute maybe 8% of the population. This is the violent criminal behavior is wildly, way out of proportion to their share of the population. Well, we're not supposed to talk about that too much because, well, you know, some people might get the wrong idea that maybe this immigration thing isn't working out too well, that we haven't selected the best. This story is almost unbelievable, and you have to pinch yourself to remember this is from the land of the free and the home of the brave. Burning the rainbow flag is a hate crime now and a criminal act, at least it is in Iowa. A 30-year-old Iowa man has been sentenced to 16, you heard it right, 16 years behind bars after tearing down a gay pride rainbow flag from the front of a church and burning it, a sentence one prominent gay rights group thinks is excessive. Well, I think it's excessive. Adolfo Martinez was found guilty of a felony hate crime and third-degree harassment after he ripped the flag off the front of the United Church of Christ in Ames, Iowa, before walking over to the Dangerous Curves Gentlemen's Club, where he was reportedly a regular. Martinez received the maximum sentence due to his status as a habitual offender with two prior felonies. He told KCCI, that's a TV station, in June that he destroyed the flag because he despises homosexuality, according to the Washington Examiner. It was an honor to do that. It was a blessing from the Lord, Martinez said. It is a judgment, and it is written to execute vengeance on the heathen and punishments upon the people, he added. I burned down their pride, plain and simple. Martinez pleaded not guilty, despite saying he had no plans to fight the charges and claiming, I'm guilty, guilty as charged. The senior minister of the United Church of Christ, Reverend Eileen Gebbe, a female, who is gay, no, she's a lesbian, but okay, said, it doesn't feel good. However, it's not going to slow us down. We won't change. She told the Des Moines Register that she's happy Martinez was found guilty, though she told NBC that 16 years was excessive. I often experience Ames, that's that city, as not being as progressive as many people believe it is, and there still is a very large closeted queer community here, Gebbe explained. But 12 people that I don't know, who have no investment in me or this congregation, said this man committed a crime and was a crime born of bigotry and hatred. Hate crimes against LGBTQ community are a serious matter as they inflict distinct emotional harms on their victims and strike fear into the community they target. Newspaper was told. That said, true justice should always strive to be about rehabilitation, reconciliation, and healing communities. It's difficult to see how a 16-year prison sentence accomplishes any of those goals. This is a homosexual spokesman. He's our neighbor, and I'd be glad to know him and to welcome him here to this space as he approaches 50 years of age upon his release, or he serves the 16 years. You notice how sincerely held religious belief suddenly morphs into hatred and bigotry. See, you're only allowed one point of view. That's right. According to the lesbian minister at the United Church of Christ Church, Martinez did what he did because of hatred and bigotry. More of the propaganda that if you disagree with them, you are either a hater or a bigot or both. This is what we have to fight back about. Well, we are fast approaching Christmas, and I have made some suggestions about how to support Christmas. This is the Christmas letter from Representative Dr. David Duke. It's a special message from David Duke on the true history of Christmas. The word Christmas comes from the old English words Christ's Mass. In German, it's Weihnachten, or holy night of the birth of Christ. In Spain, it's Navidad, or Nativity. In Russia, it's this is in both, partly in Cyrillic letters, and I can't read it, but it means birth. The early Church of Rome purposely chose December 25th for the birth of Christ because it was the Roman calendar date for the winter solstice. They missed it by 4 days, but December 21st. The sign of the sun's nadir. The rebirth of the sun and spring and the life it begins. It was the most universally important day of ancient Europeans, which the Church adopted to mark the birth of Christ and the promise of new life for him. From him, its religious and cultural significance dovetail perfectly with the ancient culture of Europe and symbolized our hopes. Both for ourselves and our children. Yes, it's okay to be white. And the message continues. The culture of Christmas is deeply embedded in the soul of our people. Created 5,000 years ago, Stonehenge was a solar and celestial calendar that long predated Christmas as it celebrated the zenith solstice of the sun in June and the sun's nadir and rebirth in December, around the 21st. The Christian celebration of the birth of Christ seemed a natural fit with our ancient culture. In fact, the Church incorporated the Christmas, or Yule tree, green wreaths of life and unity. The snow father transformed into St. Nicholas, or Santa Claus, gift-giving and symbols of new life, love, and generosity centered on the family, children, and community amid the cold and darkness of winter. Christian Christmas melded easily to our family and community ethics. It became a universally revered day for white people everywhere in the world. The white Christian heritage of America. It's politically incorrect to say it, but we must remember the American founding fathers were 100% white and overwhelmingly Christian. Even those of various religious views universally identified themselves, our culture and nation, as Christian. The Declaration of Independence claims our rights are endowed by their Creator and invokes the protection of divine providence. The Constitution's authors marked its date as at the year of our Lord. They also openly loved our white heritage. Indeed, one of the first laws they enacted allowed immigration only to free white people. So the 13 colonies, the only people allowed to immigrate were free white people. They permitted Christian prayers, hymns in government, and almost every president from Washington on down was sworn in on the Christian Bible. They were Christians, white people, and the Declaration was extremely nationalist. Truth is, they were white nationalists. Well then, who is the Grinch who stole Christmas? Hint, he's not a goy, that is a Gentile. Up until 1989, we could celebrate Christmas on public ground. Rich and powerful groups like the American Jewish Committee, the ADL, or the Anti-Defamation League, and the Jewish-run ACLU, that's the American Civil Liberties Union, waged a war on Christians. Their chutzpah, or nerve, demanded Christmas symbols be banned on all public ground. In America, chutzpah, nerve, explained by Jewish comics as a Jew found guilty of murder of his parents demands mercy because he's an orphan. The same act that banned Christian symbols gave Jews the rights to erect thousands of Jewish menorahs, that's the one of their symbols. It's I think the seven pointed candle. And that was the symbol of the massacre of Greek Goyim. Now that's chutzpah, or nerve. The 80% Christian people of America can't have a nativity scene, but a small but powerful tribe can put up a monster-sized Jewish menorah celebrating Jewish racism. David Brooks of the 100% Jewish-owned New York Times boasted of the Jewish takeover of America. So true. When he means that we can't have these, he means on public property. Christian symbols and ceremonies are banned, but monster menorahs are erected. The arrogant tyrants think that they've won, but I know we will taste victory, and they know it too. That's why they are desperate to have to shut us down. Winter is here, but our sun rises from the darkness to soon illuminate Earth. Our ancestors defeated the Ice Age. We will defeat the fear. And then David Duke ends up. My Christmas wish for you and yours. I hope you enjoyed the annual Christmas card. Perhaps it gave you a smile in a world seemingly gone mad. Yet Aryan courage and valor always rises in the face of invasion. It elicits magnificent expressions of our people's indomitable spirit. Christmas and its shared solstice celebrate renewal of life that stirs in the darkest days of winter, oppression and depression. Let us embrace the beauty and joy of our families and friends, rekindle our faith and their bodies, heal our health, inspire our minds, and make our hearts beat with greater love, strength, and purpose than ever before. Be merry this Christmas. Love and feast and play, and rest you brave warriors. Thank you for letting me serve you. Representative Dr. David Dugan, a good friend of mine. Anyway, I thought a very inspiring message. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play from a Christmas CD by a beautiful woman in Nashville, Tennessee, Julie Keach Harris. Julie was born and brought up in the state of Washington, but has moved with her husband to Nashville. And she's a person I met a number of times at John A's, that's a honky-tonk in Nashville. Great singer. This is Julie Keach Harris from her album. Jesus, look down from
Thank you. snow, let it snow. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you'll check off my Christmas list. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. To cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tip and Me. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight. Thank you. saw the red-nosed reindeer like they show on the TV screen. But he sure brought a lot of presents, so Santa Claus he must have been. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him. Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him. It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a much too thin. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him.
That was Julie Keach Harris, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me. You're on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf.